actually the middle of January already, 2009. Peter Schiff was the man, in my estimation, to really lay out the future, which is now. During his last appearance on this program and his work at his website, europac.net, he's an extraordinary man. He's an economist. More than that, he is a man who looks at reality, which unfortunately is often in short supply these days. If you go to Peter's website, again at europac.net, you'll find a lot of very pertinent, relevant, and I would say invaluable material. There are news stories. You can certainly see information about Peter, his book called The Little Book of Bull Moves and Bear Markets. You can see him in a video message, all kinds of things. He's got economic and market news headlines as well, one of which today, banks in need of even more bailout money. Big surprise, not. Peter, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure. You got an awful lot of good email the last time you were on. You were one of the very few people to not just predict doom and gloom, but you essentially told how it was going to happen, why it was going to happen, and it finally did. And I've been doing this program for 15 years, and I have to be honest with everyone, I always am. There were people many years ago talking about this kind of scenario we find ourselves in, but no one paid any attention to them. The way you presented it was so compelling and so clear that, and I don't know, I think it's been almost 2 years since you were on the program, a year and a half anyway. How was it and when was it that you came to see this current financial, many would say engineered, catastrophe clearly?
I mean, I think I've always understood, you know, market dynamics and economics, but it appeared to me, you know, in the investment area in the 1990s, I, you know, was convinced that there was a bubble going on in the stock market, particularly in tech stocks and internet. And so I was already, you know, looking at things kind of skeptically. I knew that, you know, inherently it just made no sense to me that companies that had no earnings and had, you know, no prospects of ever earning money could have multi-billion-dollar market
caps. Yes, exactly.
And so I knew that, you know, this was going to end badly, and I can see, you know, all the money going into technology, and I knew that this was a gigantic bubble of misallocation of capital and resources, and I knew that when reality set in, there was going to be a big problem for the U.S. And that technology boom bubble formed the good times of the Clinton years.
It was a high for people. They were kind of like on drugs.
Well, you know, it produced the budget surpluses,
yeah, sure,
because there was this phony economy. Everybody was getting all this capital gains.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew this was a problem. And so the bubble burst. And instead of having the recession that I knew we needed given what we had had in the boom, I saw the government acting irresponsibly and slashing interest rates and running up the deficits. And I knew that that was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
And then when you saw the real estate bubble, you know, inflating, and I was, you know, looking at this, I was renting my house, and, you know, I would look at these crazy prices people were paying.
Yeah.
And he looked at how little it cost me to rent a house, and I knew that this was just absurd. And I saw all the, you know, all the consumption going on, how people were borrowing all this money, and, you know, people were taking advantage of teaser rates and negative AM loans, and they had these tiny mortgage payments on these enormous houses. And housing prices were just rising, and everybody thought that they had won the lottery and were out spending money. I knew our economy, our GDP kept getting more and more comprised of consumption. The trade deficits just kept getting bigger and bigger. You know, first it go to, you know, we annual budget $10 billion and $20 billion a month and $30 billion and $40 billion and $50 billion and $60 billion, and no one seemed to care. And the savings rate went to a negative. I mean, we were going deeper and deeper into debt every year. And I kept watching, you know, factory after factory closed down, and, you know, more and more of our goods were imported from abroad. And you said this is just a disaster. You can see it happening in slow motion. And you can see that this is just one gigantic, you know, bubble, one huge, you know, national Ponzi scheme. you know, not unlike the one that Bernie Madoff perpetrated. Mm-hmm. And he just knew it was going to end badly. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I understood this, and a lot of other people that were, you know, brainwashed with Keynesian economics couldn't understand it. They, you know, they confused legitimate wealth creation with asset price appreciation. They confused a reckless consumption with economic growth, and they thought all the money we were spending constituted growth, and it didn't.
Excuse me, Peter, right then and there, you just said people confused the spending of money with generating real wealth and growth. How that happened is open to debate, but there was such a mass delusion at that point that you could see that the ship was headed toward the rocks. There's no other place for it to go.
And the thing is, the powers that be still don't understand what's going on. They still see the downturn as the problem, when the downturn is the solution. The problem was the artificial economy that preceded it. The problem that, you know, was all the reckless borrowing and spending. And so what is the government trying to do? What is the aim of all the stimulus and all the bailouts? You know, in his speech the other day, Ben Bernanke said that our economy runs on credit, and that's why he has to bail out all these banks. Well, the economy shouldn't be running on credit. That's the problem.
Thank you very much, sir.
You know, people shouldn't have to borrow money to live their daily lives. You don't borrow money to buy stuff.
Right.
Businesses should borrow money to make investments so they can grow, so they can, you know, they need capital so that they can produce. But people shouldn't be borrowing money to buy cars or to buy stereo equipment or washer dryers or to buy groceries. You should pay for these things out of savings. You know, if you think back to when you bought your first car, you know, as a kid, you know, did your parents go out and help you get a $20,000 or $30,000 loan so you can buy a brand new car? No. I mean, you saved your money, you mowed lawns, you delivered newspapers, and when you got a couple of $1,000, you bought a used car.
Yep.
You know, that's what every American should do. Americans should buy the cars with the money they have in their checking accounts. And if they can't afford an expensive car, they shouldn't go into debt to buy one. I mean, this is not. And now the government is saying, well, you know, here's, you've got GMAC is bankrupt because they loaned Americans too much money to buy cars. And now what does the government do? Here's $5 billion. Go make more bad loans. You know, here, you know, Bank of America is coming to the government again today after billions or tens of billions in government bailouts, says we need some more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, we got to let these companies fail. We got to let bad management, companies that have been poorly managed, go under. And we've got too much, you know, our economy is so badly misallocated, our resources are so misallocated, we have to allow the free market forces to rebalance the economy. And that can't happen without bankruptcies. But if the government refuses to let these companies go bankrupt, instead it props them up, it's just delaying the beneficial results of capitalism, which is trying to purge all these imbalances and get these resources back to where they belong.
The problem is not resolvable with this technique at all. It's you're right, it's a postponement of the inevitable, and it'll make it only worse in time. All right, a number of questions here. Not that it matters. Recession or depression?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be called a depression by the time it's over. Who knows when that's going to be. But, you know, the government is going to make it much worse. I mean, there's no question that we were going to have a significant economic contraction given what preceded us. Just like there was no question that in 1929, 1930, there was going to be a significant economic contraction. Because there were a lot of malinvestments made during the boom of the Roaring Twenties.
Right.
The Roaring Twenties resulted from the Fed, which, through bad monetary policy, they kept interest rates too low, and they inflated the stock market bubble. And when it burst, all of the malinvestments that were made during that bubble were liquidated, or they were going to be liquidated until Hoover intervened. But what happened was Hoover came into the market, and became the most interventionist president in history up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he refused to let market forces work. And he basically turned that contraction into what became the Great Depression. Now, when Roosevelt came in, he simply perpetuated the policies of Hoover, only on a grander scale. And he exacerbated and extended the Great Depression, and it lasted for another decade. And this was all because of Roosevelt and because of Hoover.
Right.
And now you have George Bush and now Barack Obama are going to repeat all the mistakes that created the last Great Depression, only they're doing it at a time when our economy is even in worse shape and even more vulnerable, so they're likely to do even more damage.
We have no manufacturing base to speak of like we did the potential for back then and many other things. Hold on, Peter, we have to pause. The brilliant Peter Schiff is our guest this first hour. His website is europac.net. Do stop by. Be right back. That's with Peter Schiff. Peter, in this age of social non-accountability, no one's accountable. They make a mistake. It's always somebody else's fault. That seems to have extended into the financial sector as well. No, it's not my fault. I don't deserve to go under. I don't deserve to be held accountable for poor business practices and all the rest of it. And then with the good old boy network, of course, and all this non-existent taxpayer money for bailouts, do we have a situation where we're now facing, and today's story about the banks going back asking for more money, of course, which is going to go on continually, do we have a situation of what I would call a bailout bubble?
Well, I mean, obviously the governments are bailing out companies with money they don't have, and in so doing, they're preventing market dynamics from functioning. They're entrenching the misallocation of resources. They're rewarding incompetent money businesses and management.
Right.
And they're taxing competent people or the entrepreneurs that might step up and take over from these failed companies. And they're miring the country in a perpetual economic decline. And, you know, the money for all these bailouts has to come from someplace. And obviously the government doesn't have the money, so it's trying to borrow it. But obviously now it's committed to pay it back. And we're borrowing it from the Chinese and the Japanese and the Saudis and the rest of the world. And, of course, when they come to their senses, which I think is going to happen soon, we won't be able to borrow from them. And then the only source of the money is going to be Ben Bernanke's printing press. And, of course, money printed doesn't have any value. It simply destroys the value of the money that already exists. And that's the path that we're looking to go down, where everybody gets a bailout, and eventually everybody needs a bailout because we'll all be broke.
Everybody will eventually face a bailout. Zimbabwe just printed a $40 billion note.
Well, they have a bigger one because they have a $500 billion note because I have it. Somebody sent it to me.
Unbelievable. Well, there you go. So it's Weimar times 1,000 down there.
Yeah, or it was $100 billion. I can't remember. Yeah, it was $100 billion. I had a $500 million note, and then someone sent me a $100 billion note.
Who's is Mugabe's picture on it?
I don't remember whose picture was on it.
That's really
all I remember is it had an expiration date. Yeah, the expiration date was December 31st, so now it's officially worthless.
Jeez.
Even though it's practically worthless, but I got it.
Yeah. Funny stuff. All right. Has Bernanke lost control? Has the Fed lost control? Is the whole thing now truly out of control with, of course, the last resort being the printing press?
Well, I think it is. I think basically the government will refuse to admit that the extent of these problems or its role in creating them, and they want to maintain the illusion that the government can do something to solve our problems, and all they can do is make them worse. And so, unfortunately, we're now going down this road where the more the government intervenes in the economy, the worse the economy is going to get, which is going to provide the justification for even greater interference.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the government creates more problems, it creates the need for more government solutions, which compound the problems. And unfortunately, in the process, we end up surrendering our rights and our liberties, and we empower the government. And the government becomes more and more corrupt as it acquires more power. And unfortunately, this is a spiral that's going to be very difficult to ever reverse.
I personally think that long about next June, July, Obama's ratings are going to be down not too far off from Bush's low approval ratings.
I don't know if they'll fall that quickly. I think, you know, there'll still be a lot of hope, and Obama will still be able to blame the worsening economy on his predecessor
and try to claim
that were it not for all of his wise policies, that we'd be in even worse shape.
Mm. His appointments so far have left you, and you can fill in the blank.
Excuse me?
His appointments so far have left you feeling...
Well, I don't know. I'm not very impressed by the appointments, and it doesn't seem that he's appointing anybody out of the ordinary or any... You know, it's all the usual suspects.
That's right.
You know, I don't see... Again, you know, Barack Obama campaigned on change. There's no change here. You know, all he's doing is more of the same, only worse. You know, it's unfortunate that the country thinks they're getting change. The only change they're going to have is, you know, that's about all the money that's going to be left in their pockets.
Truly tragic in a way. I've referred to it, as have others, as the greatest political con job in American history, of course, made possible by the dependence and belief in the media that so many people refer to and actually relate to as almost a godlike presence. This is a pop culture president. He's a People magazine president. This is ridiculous. He's a sock puppet, basically. But we're not going to see change. You're talking to an audience that well understands that for the most part. So if the Fed has lost control, and some make that case, I think, very convincingly, what do we do? And we have a break coming up here, but think about this. And do we nationalize the Fed? Do we try to abolish the Fed? The interest rates are... What are the rates now? I forgot.
Well, they're practically zero.
0.5 or something? That's weird. Yeah, practically zero is right. So the big question is, what do we do with the Fed? How culpable is Bernanke and the Fed for running this ship not on the rocks, but actually up on the beach? When we come back, we'll talk to Peter Schiff about that. His website is europac.net, Europac Capital. He will advise you on how to invest, and we'll talk about that also in a little bit with Peter in just a few. Tonight is Peter Schiff. Peter, what about the Fed? What do we do with it, if anything?
Well, look, it's hard to say let's just abolish it, because what are we going to replace it with? Unfortunately, the people in Congress probably know even less probably than the people at the Fed,
and might
do it even more, a worse job if we just simply handed the printing presses over to them. So I would love to abolish the Fed, but the question is, you know, who's going to abolish it and what is going to replace it? Now, I want to go back to this constitutional money. I mean, the country existed before the creation of the Fed in 1913, and we don't need a central bank. I think central banking has done far more harm than good. If we're simply going to reform the Fed, I'd like to at least restore the Fed to its original mission and its original function, which was to supply an elastic money supply, not one that perpetually grew, and to make the Federal Reserve notes backed by gold the way they originally were, and to limit, you know, right now the Federal Reserve has completely gone amok. I mean, the stuff that it's doing now in the last year or two, is nowhere authorized in its charter. And, you know, it's buying all sorts of stuff. The Fed's got its balance sheet loaded up with credit card debt and subprime mortgages and auto loans. And this is nonsense.
All right. Now, it makes sense. The big question, I think, is what's ahead in the next 6 months. We're looking at unemployment that may reach 20 million, maybe more. Officially, it's probably over that now. You know how that works, folks. They don't count the people who are not looking for work. So we've got an economy that is, in some ways, already in a depression, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, it's going to get a lot worse. I mean, I think, you know, we've been in a contraction for well over a year. And, you know, even though government statistics didn't reflect it at the beginning, I think that's just the fault of the statisticians. And I think that the numbers are hiding the problem because they're very manipulated. And I also think the government is lying about the extent of inflation. So I think over the years, economic growth that they claimed existed was really non-existent. It was all because of the numbers.
Lying is almost structural now to our system and our way of life. People almost expect it, and you're seeing it at every possible level. The U.S. budget deficit set an all-time record for the fiscal first quarter. These things are just incredible. Although, again, if you've been listening to Peter Schiff for the last several years, you're not surprised. He knew. What about investing with you and Europac? I remember the last time you were on. A lot of people ask me about this, and I send a lot of people your way. I don't know what they did, but very intrigued with your knowledge, your wisdom, your grounded way of approaching this issue. Tell our people what you actually do first, and then tell us how it's working.
Well, I run a brokerage firm, and I help people invest money. You know, I help people invest money principally outside the United States. And, you know, basically I wrote a book that really, incorporated what I was doing called Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. That book came out in February of 2007.
Uh-huh.
And I basically had three chapters of that book on how to structure a portfolio. One was to have precious metals. I believed that the price of gold would rise, and I thought that people should have a significant percentage of their portfolio in physical gold bullion and silver and, you know, precious metals. And when I first wrote that book, I think gold was around $600 an ounce, and I had been recommending it for many, many years, and now it's around $800. It's risen as high as $1,000, but I think it's going a lot higher. I had a chapter in which I recommended that people buy foreign dividend-paying stocks, a way to lock up cash flow in currencies other than the dollar, because I believe the dollar is going to fall. And, when I wrote my book, the dollar index was about 84, 85, and it fell to 71. And, you know, many kinds of currencies rose substantially in the year following the release of my book. And, of course, the dollar had been falling prior to my book. And then I also recommended that people hold a lot of cash to take advantage of opportunities that might present themselves during the financial collapse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I talked also about the need to have foreign cash, like Japanese yen and Swiss francs and other currencies.
Yeah.
And basically, over the last 6 months, the one part of the portfolio that has not performed short term, but of course, you know, I was never recommending the investments as short term, have been foreign stocks. And foreign stocks have fallen sharply in the past 6 months. And the U.S. dollar has actually risen in value, which is something that I didn't expect, although it fell rather substantially, prior to this crisis beginning to unfold. And I think that's created some incredible opportunities for people who want to buy these dividend-paying foreign stocks, because with the prices down, the dividends are actually a lot higher than they were. And with the dollar up, you're getting a lot more, bang for your buck. I also recommended that people who wanted to speculate short things, and of course, all the short ideas worked out extremely well. I mean, I suggested that people short subprime mortgages. That ended up being a phenomenal trade for the people who did it. I suggested that people short the financials, that they short the home builders, that they short the retailers. And so, any of the people who played this thing from the short side, did really well. But I think the biggest opportunities are not on the short side at this point. I think the biggest opportunities are buying some of the stocks, particularly the stocks in the Asian markets, the stocks that are exposed to China, stocks that are in the natural resource sector that really got beaten down substantially. Many of those stocks I owned. And I think it's a great opportunity. I've been buying more of these stocks myself, and I think, the people who really got rich, during the 1930s, were not the people who shorted stocks in 1929, but were the people who had the resources to buy them, at depressed levels during the Depression.
That's a very important point. You mentioned gold. What's happening to gold? I mean, Bill Murphy and Gatta and so many people have been for years yelling and screaming that the gold is being artificially suppressed. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, certainly central banks are selling gold and adding to the supply. They should be buying gold. And I know the powers that be certainly have a vested interest in trying to suppress the price of gold, but I don't know how much active manipulation is actually involved. But ultimately, the price of gold is going a lot higher. Look, gold went from $250 an ounce in 2000 to $1,000 an ounce in 2008. Yes, we've pulled back, but we've only pulled back 20%. Look how much stocks have pulled back. Gold has held up better than every other asset. It's held up better than other commodities. Look, oil went from 140 down to less, down to 30-something. Gold didn't have that kind of drop.
No. All right. Gold has to go up. No question about that. There is talk about confiscation again, although you expect to hear that kind of chatter. More to come with Peter Schiff in just a couple of minutes. Back with Peter Schiff. Bernie Madoff today ordered to stay under house arrest. It's amazing. If you or I had pulled off something like that, Peter, I don't think we'd be living in luxury under house arrest. What are people in the community talking about when they consider this issue of Madoff obviously getting some extraordinary preferential treatment here?
I guess the politicians have a lot of respect for him. They probably admire the fact that he's able to pull this off.
Or he has something.
Role model.
Yeah, or he's got something on a lot of people.
I think the U.S. government basically operates under the same dynamics as Madoff. They run gigantic Ponzi schemes.
That brings me to the next question. This is clearly suggestive of only one of many. When Glass-Steagall went out the window, and the Clintons kind of opened the door for this whole derivatives thing in the early 90s. I'm sure you saw that as an astonishing problem in the making as well. So what about the issue of other Ponzi schemes? Do you have any names you can drop?
Well, like Social Security?
Yes, sir.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
But I think the entire way that the U.S. government finances the budget deficit is...
Every year to year, yeah.
I mean, when the government sells bonds, and when the bonds mature, they sell more bonds to pay off the old bonds. I mean, that's the only way they can do it.
Who wants to buy bonds anymore?
Well, apparently a lot of people, but I mean, I think they're mainly speculators.
Uh-huh.
But there's clearly a bubble in the bond market, and when it bursts, look out. It's going to be worse than the housing bubble or.
Right. All these things are coming soon this year. Early next year, 40% of American mortgages may find themselves in a failure mode before this is all over. Defaults, people walking away. How bad is the? They keep talking about the subprime as being a trigger for all this. I don't.
The subprime wasn't the trigger. Subprime was just the weakest link in the chain, so it went first.
There you go.
But as I said, from the beginning, it was never a subprime problem. It was a mortgage problem. It was a real estate problem. And subprime was the tip of a huge iceberg. We're now starting to see the rest of the iceberg. That's all.
And it is a whopper. So if 40% of American mortgages were to fail, it wouldn't surprise you.
No. In fact, more than that might fail. In fact, 40% probably would have already failed were it not for all the things that the government has already done to artificially prop up the market.
Should people refinance? Rates are down.
Well, sure. I mean, if you can't sell your home, and rates could fall even further in the short run. But yeah, I mean, why would you make a mortgage payment of 6% when you might be able to refinance to 5%. I mean, obviously you can cut your expenses, but I think when people refinance, they should make sure to refinance into a fixed rate loan.
Got it.
I do not fall for any kind of adjustable rate.
No.
Even if the rate is low now, it won't stay low.
No, not going to. Potential for panic?
Well, I mean, most people don't have the good sense. I don't think, you know, people say, well, people that are selling their stocks are panicking. I don't think so. I think that there are serious problems in this country, and I think they're being underestimated. I think there's far more complacency out there than panic.
Was any of this orchestrated, contrived?
I don't think so. I don't think our leaders were smart enough to orchestrate it. I think it's just the natural consequences of their incompetence and their ineptness.
When it got into a world of complete non-reality, though, this was some years ago. This didn't just creep up on people. Were there any other people beside Peter Schiff and some colleagues, perhaps, who understood this clearly, that it was doomed, that it was going to fall?
There were a lot of people, you know, that were saying this, with Jimmy Rogers.
Jim was, yeah. I mean, anybody in position.
Mark Faber, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, David Tice. Bill Fleckenstein. I mean, there are a number of people.
But nobody in key positions.
Well, not in government, no. I mean, yeah. Ron Paul, I mean, he's, you know, I mean, if you think a congressman is a key position, but.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some people out there sounding the alarm, just nobody had the sense to hear it.
No, I don't think a lot of people wanted to hear it. That's
but still, though,
question.
You know, that's the amazing part, is that given all the accurate forecasts that I have made and other people have made, over the years, the government still ignores our warnings and continues to turn for advice to the very same people that got it wrong for so many years. The people that were saying everything was great, that what I was saying was impossible, that the economy was sound, that it in fact had never been better when we were on the eve of the biggest collapse since the Great Depression.
Right.
That the people who couldn't see this coming, who were so wrong, these are the people who we're turning to for solutions to a problem that they clearly don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's the amazing part.
Right. So, for our few listeners out there who are still supporters of Obama, your counsel to them would be?
Well, I mean, why are they supporting him? I mean, what are they? What is it that they think he's going to do?
That was one of the problems of the whole Obama movement. None, if few, if any, of his supporters could actually elucidate on the positions that they were moved by to support him. They couldn't tell you anything about the man.
He's just saying that he's going to make things better. How? Magically. He's just going to somehow take money from people who have it and give it to them to people who need it more.
Coming out of the Chicago criminal milieu, he's going to take money from the rich and give it to the poor. Redistribute wealth. Remember that one? I don't think.
Yeah,
so.
Well, it, more likely, what he's going to do, he's going to equal out everything by making the rich poor, and then we'll all be poor together. And you know, misery loves company.
That'll take care of America. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what they do. They don't redistribute the wealth. Government redistributes poverty.
Now, there's a quote. Peter, you need to put that on the top of your website.
I don't think I made that up. I think somebody already said that.
it's absolutely correct. The commercial real estate crash is gathering momentum now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, real estate, you know, commercial real estate was a bubble, just like residential real estate, because, you know, the cap rates that real estate were selling for were absurd, and people were buying properties looking for appreciation and assigning crazy values. But also a lot of the real estate, of course, you know, what's on the real estate, a shopping center, a mall. And, you know, Americans are too broke to shop. We built out too much retail space in this country. And so a lot of this retail space is under pressure, you know, and Americans just can't afford to shop anymore. They never could afford it in the first place, but they went into debt. But now they can't pay their debts, and the lenders won't lend anymore because they're broke, because we can't pay back the money they loaned us. And so you're having that go down. You're having a lot of the service sector, economy, a lot of the offices, they're laying off people. A lot of the, you know, you have, let's say you had mortgage brokers who, you know, you had Wall Street, all the space that was, all the financial service guys who are losing their jobs. So you have a lot of space coming out of the market. the market's weak. Meanwhile, a lot of the people who bought real estate, and this is a function of government. You know, the way the government runs our tax system, when you're in the real estate market, whenever anybody earns a profit, they don't want to pay the income tax. So the way they avoid the income tax is they have to take their money and roll it into another real estate buy. But the government says you can't pay down any debt, that you have to end up rolling into a larger mortgage than the one you first had. So in order to postpone their taxes, every real estate guy constantly goes deeper and deeper into debt. Mm-hmm. And so the whole real estate structure is layered with debt. Mm-hmm. And most of the debt is short term. Mm-hmm. And so now in this credit crunch, where landlords are seeing a diminished income, but their rent, their debt burden is growing, you're getting all these bankruptcies. And all the bankruptcies people are trying to sell, there's no buyers, and it's just a complete collapse.
Well.
And it's coming.
Retail chains, individual stores. Are there any opportunities in this?
There's a lot of retailers. Look, you know, you had companies like Circuit City. Linens and Things.
They're gone.
A number of these companies are going to be closing their doors in the next several years.
Next several months, a lot of them, yeah.
But more and more. I mean, the whole landscape is going to change. And the retailers that remain are going to remain with far fewer stores. I mean, they're going to be shutting stores because they're overexpanded during the bubble time.
Oh, sure. Loony time. Is this a chance for small business to make a modest comeback and...
It would if the government wasn't being so disruptive to the markets. If the government wasn't, propping up all the firms that should fail and tossing the more competent firms that would normally, fill the void and take their place and take that market share and take over those resources. The government is preventing all these positive things from happening with their actions.
They are.
So, I mean, there are going to be some opportunities for some entrepreneurs. It might not be a bad time to start, opening up a string of pawn shops. There's certain types of business.
Well, that's for sure. Garage sales are big time now.
We all can't sell our stuff to each other because there's not going to be anybody to buy.
Well, it's going to be a barter thing, I think. This whole idea of spending our way out of it is...
Well, we can't.
It's insane.
That's impossible. We spent our way into it. You know, our economy is in trouble because we had too much borrowing and too much spending. And Barack Obama's solution is that we borrow and spend even more.
There's the writing on the wall.
If we suffer from an excess of debt and spending, how is spending more? That's like saying, the cure for obesity is junk food.
Sure.
Or, if you're drunk, the way to sober up is to have more alcohol. That's not how it works.
Exactly the same thing. Peter, we're just about out of time. What would you like to leave us with in the last 30 seconds or so here?
Well, take advantage of the books that I've got, to go and read the Crash Proof and the little book. Go to my website, www.europac.net, and read all the articles that I've written over the years and look at some of my videos. There's over 3,000 videos of me on YouTube now. So you can watch them on YouTube or watch them on my website. And call if you're looking to do something to protect your wealth. Call and talk to one of my brokers. They're there, 800-727-7922. It's 800-727-7922.
Peter, thank you. I only wish the Obama people had named someone like you to be chief financial economic advisor. We might have a chance. Thanks very much, my friend. I appreciate it. Good night. Peter Schiff, back in just a few minutes. Glad you're along tonight.